Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And it's another divine intervention, and having tried a bubbly last week, this week we are trying what I hope will be an elegant Chardonnay. Chardonnay, of course, is one of the classic white wine grapes, which was very much in fashion for a long time, then went out of fashion, and hopefully, if this is any good, we will start a new fashion. But before we start the fashion, I'd better introduce our guests, and of course our food and wine guru down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, award-winning chef, award-winning writer of cookbooks, award-winning website owner. Michael, is there anything you haven't won an award for?
Talking to you on the radio, John.
Well, just have to submit this. I'm sure there's a jolly interesting podcast for people who like getting drunk competition somewhere in the world. We will find it. We will win. And as long as the prize is liquid, I won't be too upset. With me in the Joburg studio, welcome back. She's been on a few of our recordings in the past. We managed to entice her back into the studio from Wine Concepts, that excellent wine boutique. I would call it a bottle store, but she'd just turn her nose up at me. In the Bluebird Centre, just off Corlett Drive, Colleen Morris. Great to have you back.
Thank you for having me again.
And for the second week in a row, we welcome back Jeremy Sampson, a branding expert from Interbrand Sampson de Villiers. A lot of words there. Don't you think a brand should be more concise, Mr. Sampson?
John, thank you.
Good. Well, nice to see you too. Okay, well, we've introduced and defended our guests, so it's time to introduce and defend the wine. I'm sure it won't need too much defense. It's a 2013... I'm just checking the label. A 2013 unoaked Chardonnay from Jordan. Michael, tell us about it.
John, kind of interesting. I was talking to Dani Devet the other day, and he was telling me how there's this growing market for unoaked Chardonnay. And I think in South Africa, we did the same as the Australians. We made the mistake of 20-odd years ago of using young fruit, Chardonnay, and overpowering it with oak. Now the pendulum has swung the other way. And on Jordan, which is owned by the Jordan family up in Stellenbosch Kloof, beautiful, beautiful views down over Cape Town and Stellenbosch. They have got vineyards of Chardonnay, which were planted 28 years ago. And in a sort of a cooler, south-facing slope, specially trellised to provide low yields. So you've got a lovely sort of complex concentration of flavour. What they do is after the grapes are harvested, they cold soak them for 2 days. This is a process where no fermentation takes place, but with the skin contact, you start getting flavour building in the wine. It's fermented in the tank using a selection of French yeasts, which are good with Chardonnay and sort of add the right sort of flavors. And then it lies on the lees for 4 months in the tank, and they stir it occasionally. This is a process called batonnage, stirring with a wooden baton. And what that does is that builds a wonderful middle palate on the wine. So you have this wine, it's now just over a year old. It's got this incredible freshness, lovely sort of citrusy, limey, and underground sort of undertow of white flowers and lovely, lovely tropical fruit, and that sort of full flavor that you get with a winter melon. It's beautifully balanced. It's long. It just keeps on going forever, and you get that lovely lees flavor at the end.
I always thought batonnage is what the police did during riot control, but obviously, Michael, you are the expert. I have to say, I am thoroughly enjoying this. I don't like over-oaked Chardonnays, although at one stage I did. I'm not quite sure why. This is a superb wine. It's really, really gorgeous. I am enjoying it a lot, and that's all I have to say. I shall pass over to our real experts. Colleen Morris, are you enjoying this Jordan Unoaked Chardonnay from 2013?
Yeah, I think what I do like about it especially is the richness that comes through, and that is due to that extra lees contact, which you see often on an unwooded Chardonnay, because people who drink Chardonnay do not want to drink a Sauvignon Blanc, so you have to give them a little bit of richness, but not everybody likes oak, and then this is a winner, where the guy who doesn't like the oak, but he does want to drink Chardonnay, and then you get this kind of a wine which hits the spot.
Rich, robust,
yeah,
wonderful.
Lovely richness.
But what do I know, Jeremy Sampson?
John, you mentioned how you used to like the heavily oaked, and it's interesting how things go in and out of fashion, and I think as one gets older, one's tastes might change. So it is interesting. I know there are some estates that are still producing oaked and unoaked. I remember a very pleasant evening once at Glencardo trying the two alongside each other, which was fascinating. I don't know if Darnley De Wet still produces an oaked. Yes, I'm told Colleen knows. And I don't know if Jordan does. But no, the Jordan reputation as a brand has been growing hugely over the last few years. As Michael says, it's a beautiful property. I was last down there about 18 months ago. They have a superb restaurant there, Jordan as well. But just the view from their deck out across the valley, it really is beautiful. And of course, as you drive up that valley, you go past De Morganton as well. So you're already being programmed before you get to the wine, and the wine does not disappoint. Absolutely superb.
Well, nice to know there's a Jordan that isn't full of Palestinian terrorists. full of super grapes instead. Michael, we often chat about what you might want to munch on drinking a wine like this. Certainly, I think this would stand up to a whole variety of food. Maybe even something slightly spicy and oriental.
Yeah, I was thinking you were probably going to come around and ask me that, and that. I was writing a piece yesterday, and one of the dishes, a photograph of which I put in on my website, was a pork fillet, which had been barbecued on a maple plank. And it was served with a honey and mustard dressing and some caramelized apples. Now, for me, that would hit the spot absolutely perfectly for a wine like this. And I suppose if you had some boiled potatoes and a really nice piece of raclette and some little baby gherkins, and you just scrape that melty raclette onto the potatoes and put some chopped gherkins over, that would be pretty damn good too.
Well, Michael, I have to say, I cooked one of your recipes this week from your website. It's michaeloliphier.com, isn't it? Am I right there, or is it .co.za?
Dot Koza.
It was, again, a pork recipe, your pork medallions in cider and Calvados or brandy. Unfortunately, I'd drunk all my Calvados. So I did it with brandy. And I have to say, Michael, that is one of the winning recipes I've cooked in the last 10 years. It came out so well. I trebled the brandy and doubled the cider and put in a bit of extra cream. But nonetheless, it came out absolutely superbly. And the thing that really excited me was the way that, having been butchered, well, it was obviously well butchered, but having been ruined by my cooking techniques, the pork was still wonderfully tender at the end of it. And guess what I'm having the leftovers of tonight? Colleen, anything you would recommend with this unwooded Chardonnay from Jordan?
I agreed with that first bit where you said something spicy might even work, as long as it's not overly spicy. But I'm thinking about, you know, sort of the gentler Asian spices, something along those lines could work quite well, because I think the little bit of sweetness that you pick up in the wine would go really well with something slightly spicy. But this is also what I like about unwooded Chardonnay, and this one specifically, is that it's also a lovely lunchtime wine. It doesn't have to be serious. It can work in summer, it can work in winter, so it's an all-year-round a pleaser. You know, you can have this, like you say, with a dinner with pork, or you can have it in the middle of summer with a lovely light salad of maybe, citrus salad. I think that would, all those things would work really well. And that is probably why farms like Jordan, like Glencarlo, have realized that they need to broaden their offering. They have the heavy oak Chardonnays, the ones that they make in big styles that needs to be kept for a few years for the serious wine drinker. And then they have something like this, which sort of introduces people to Chardonnay who don't like the oak and who's always said no to Chardonnay because of the oak that's always associated with it. And this way you can introduce Chardonnay to those people. So yeah, it hits a few spots.
How many of your spots does it hit, Mr. Sanson?
It hits all the right spots. You know, this is where there's a lot of knowledge around me here, and more knowledge than I have. But I find this quite a light Chardonnay. I must say, Michael talking about pork, you know, I'm a Somerset man. That means I'm a cider man. And, you know, getting a decent cider in South Africa is not always the most easy of things. But still, I think of pork with lots of cider and lots of apples. But this sort of Chardonnay would be absolutely delicious. And it's easy drinking. You know, gone are the days perhaps when we had, was it fumets and things like that, which were the very heavy, where I heard that sort of oak chippings were sprinkled into the wine at the last minute before it was put into the bottle. But this is pure and delicious and highly recommended.
I can't say anything other than that. Michael, just to return to something that, as you know, our podcasts go out on my website, ZA Confidential, and a week or two back, I asked a few of our experts for comment on an issue that certainly interested me, which is whether or not one should charge for wine tastings on a wine farm. And both you and our two studio guests were kind enough to submit comment for that. And I was just wondering if maybe we could go back on it. My own view is, I think that if you're marketing something, unless you need to put a premium on the tasting event to keep out the riffraff, it's not a bad idea to offer a few schlurps free. And that's my own view. But you I know have run a wine estate, or at least the tasting side of it, down in the Cape. What are your feelings?
You know, it's quite interesting. I was at a wine tasting 2 days ago, where this came up, and the people around me were wine writers. And two of them own an old family wine estate, and there was absolute total agreement that people should be charged for tasting.
Jeremy Sampson, when you walk into a tasting room, do you begrudge the fact that sometimes they ask you to dig into your wallet before they'll pull out the cork?
To be honest, no, because I regard going onto a wine estate as a privilege for me to be able to go in and enjoy the environment and the wines. I think one has to say in Stellenbosch there is a problem, and the problem is there are lots of students. And one's got to accept that, you know. And I remember from my student days that, you know, when money was everything, you go to the cheapest watering hole, as it were, you could find, and that was fair enough. And also you tended to get drunk as quickly as you could, and then you didn't have to spend any more money. But that's another thing. But no.
So what's changed?
Nothing has changed. Okay. And this is the thing, that you need to get respect. And going on to some of those wine estates, you know, where those bottles of wine are perhaps selling for upwards of 100, 200, 300 rands a bottle, that's a lot of money. And we also know that a lot of the wine estates, quite bluntly, are struggling financially. You know, it's not the most profitable business to be in. There's just a handful of estates who are doing pretty well financially, but the vast majority are having a difficult time. So I'm all for saying, right, we'll charge you whatever it is, 20, 30, 50 rand for a tasting. But if you buy a case of six or whatever, then that will fall away. I think that's professional, and that's fair enough.
Agree.
Colleen, your thoughts? And maybe I know that you come from a wine farming family, but you also, in the latest incarnation, are running wine outlets, retail outlets. First of all, should one pay on a farm? And secondly, why does one not normally have to pay at a retail outlet?
Well, see, the difference between the farm and the retail outlet is a lot of people go and visit a farm that maybe not necessarily is there for the wine. They may be just going along. It's maybe a group of four where there's two of them that are really interested in the wine. The others drink along. They don't really care what's in their glass. But, you know, I'm really divided on the thing in a certain way, because I think that each farm has something unique. And if you offer a unique experience, then I'm happy to pay for it, because you're going to make me remember that, and you're giving me more than just a little bit of wine in the bottom of a glass. But when a farm sits out in the sticks, you know, some people, you make your appointment to go, whatever the case might be, you drive all the way out there. The farm should say, thank you very much for making all this effort to come all the way out here, because clearly you are interested in my wine, otherwise you wouldn't have gone all the way out here. And then, you know, a tasting should maybe be free. But that same farm is the one who maybe get one visitor a day, so they open all these bottles for one visitor, and then what must I do with the rest? Mm. You know, so it really is a catch-22 situation, and where the farms must decide at what point are they losing money doing it, and at what point. I think it's a marketing exercise, and they should at the least break even with what they're offering, and not try and make money out of it, because it's a marketing exercise. Mm. In retail, it's a little bit different. You know, people are walking into the store, they're already there, they're already interested. You want to sell them something. If you are able to open a bottle of wine, let them try it before they buy it, your chance of selling that wine is better than any other wine in the shop. So again, it's for farm, it's marketing at the point where my wine's available to sell immediately. It's much better than offering the wine for tasting at a restaurant where you can't actually buy that wine to take home. Yes, you can drink the wine that night at the restaurant, but you can't buy it to take home, so he's got to go and find a place where you can buy it.
Well, we will return to the topic in a later podcast, maybe even talking about events like WineX, where you pay to enter a room full of wine stalls and can slurp your way around. Mm. But unfortunately, we are once again out of time. So many thanks to our food and wine guru down in the Cape, Michael Olivier. Great chatting to you again, Michael.
John, thanks so much.
And in our Joburg studio from the Wine Concepts boutique at the Bluebird Centre in Joburg, Colleen Morris. Colleen, great to chat to you.
Thank you very much.
And once again to our branding guru, but who is also a wine writer in his own wine right, Jeremy Sampson. Jeremy, great seeing you again.
John, as always, thank you.
I'm John Fraser. This was Divine Intervention.